Welcome to Babel Undone, a podcast created by Premier in partnership with Archbishop Joseph D'Souza and the Good Shepherd Church of India. Bishop D'Souza is a renowned Christian intellectual and civil rights activist from India who leads the Good Shepherd movement and the All India Christian Council. And I'm Johnny Moore, an American evangelical who serves as the president of the Congress of Christian Leaders and JDA worldwide. We live in an interconnected world where the questions are complex. So on every episode of Babel Undone, Bishop D'Souza and I aim to bring the global church together in conversation about an important issue facing everyone. And we do it from different perspectives. Bishop comes from the East and I come from the West. So naturally, we meet in London. So, Bishop, what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about the Christian response to persecution. And you don't have to watch the news for too long to discover that millions of people in many parts of the world are victims of human rights violations and persecution for faith on a daily basis. And I'm not talking just about the persecution of Christians, but people of faith everywhere, whether it's in Middle East, Africa, or in South Asia. And the world definitely needs public servants who are compassionate, to seek justice, and are willing to speak out for those who are being mistreated by their own leaders and neighbors. And so we're going to discuss that subject today, and we have invited a key figure in this movement for speaking out.
And her name is Baroness Caroline Cox. She may be the world's most revered advocate for religious freedom. She became a life peer in 1983 for her contributions to education, and she's also served as the Deputy Speaker of the House of Lords. Lady Cox, she continues to sit in the House of Lords as a crossbencher, as a frequent contributor to debates on countries where not only Christians are persecuted, but people of all and any faith is persecuted. Her work has taken her literally again and again and again to the most dangerous places in the world. And there are people who agree with her, people who disagree with her. She's feared by people all around the world for her advocacy. But no one questions the courage and the moral fortitude of the Lady Cox. And she's with us now. Baroness, our Christian audience is all over the world. I'm from North America. We have people listening to us from South America, from Africa, from Asia, of course, from Europe and the United Kingdom. We know you really well. We've seen your impact. You're a hero to the Archbishop and to myself. But not everyone knows you as we know you. You know, there's a pastor or a Christian layperson in some country that's discovering for the first time Caroline Cox. And so so here's a very, very simple question. How do you answer it if someone asks you, who is Caroline Cox?
Well, thank you very much. I always say I'm a nurse and a social scientist by intention and a baroness by astonishment. I was not into politics. I was the first baroness I'd ever met. And it's quite a thing. You wake up one morning, excuse me, you find a baroness looking at yourself out of the bathroom mirror. Quite shocked. But I asked God, well, how I use the privilege of being able to speak in the House of Lords, because that's what being a baroness brings with it. The House of Lords is one of the houses in the British Parliament, two chambers. House of Lords is one of them. And I thought, how do I use the privilege of speaking in the British Parliament? And the message came very clearly. It's a wonderful place to be a voice for people whose voices are not heard, for suffering persecution and oppression, who are not on the radar screen. And so I tend to use, or try to use, my role in the House of Lords to be a voice for people whose voices are not heard. It's predominantly working with our brothers and sisters suffering persecution in various parts of the world, but also as a parallel agenda, and that's helping Muslim women in the United Kingdom who have marriages, Sharia marriages, which are not legally registered, and they can be very vulnerable to divorce, to maltreatment. And so I have a private members bill trying to make sure that all Islamic marriages, Sharia marriages, are legally registered. So those are my two main roles in the House of Lords.
And, you know, we support and we are in solidarity with both of the agendas that's upon your heart. Thank God for this new addition to the plight of the Muslim women. and their abuse within the context of marriages, Sharia marriages here. Baroness, what's impacted me about you and the work you do for religious freedom is you just don't talk about it. You go out there. And you've been to some of the worst places and you've taken risks that most activists, even for religious freedom, won't do. So if I were to ask you a question, was there a time, what was the worst, most risky place that you went to and where you, like Paul, probably despaired even of life, whether you'd even get back?
Well, it'd be my privilege to go to many people who are in war zones. They're the people we try to select to be our partners. One which comes to mind in answer to your question is there's a little land called Nagorno-Karabakh that is part of ancient Armenia. Armenia was the first nation to become Christian in the 4th century. But Stalin stuck this little bit of ancient Armenia inside Azerbaijan. And Azerbaijan, it's called Nagorno-Karabakh, has recently, I'm sorry to say, carried out ethnic cleansing of all the Armenians from that little land. But I went there many times, especially in the early 1990s, when there was a war there. And I remember one of the sort of situations in response to your question, we used to fly in by helicopter, and the helicopters were always fired at. And so I would go in under fire, expecting the likelihood of being shot down. But obviously I'm here today, so I wasn't shot down once or twice, but God preserved us. And so I was able to take the aid into the people in Nagorno-Karabakh and be their voice. And I'm still here today.
Wow.
So in my experience, Baroness, meeting persecuted Christians all around the world, what strikes me a lot is that they're these aren't super Christians many times, most of the time. They're just like regular, everyday people like the rest of us who face challenges that we don't all face. And I carry some of those memories with me. You know, I remember meeting a Catholic nun in Iraq at the height of ISIS. And she said to me, her name was Sister Diana, and she said, you know, I love America. It's a beautiful country, amazing people. I have a PhD from an American university. And then she said, but you take care of your pets so well. So when will you care for us, your brothers and sisters in Christ? And I will, for the rest of my life, I'll remember that conversation with Sister Diana. I remember sitting and watching the steel faith of this Catholic nun saving people every day. I imagine you have had some encounters around the world that have stayed with you, some stories, some individuals, you know, as you crisscross this planet as an advocate. Are there any of those stories or situations you want to share with us?
I could talk about that for a long time. I think we've run out of time. But maybe I'll just give one example. I've got time for two. I can give two of the amazing dignity and grace of our brothers and sisters suffering persecution. I'll take one more example from the Armenians in Nagorno-Karabakh, because they're not really covered in the international media, and they are the first nation to become Christian. And I remember, I was there in war in the early 1990s, and I met a soldier who was not actually in uniform at the time, but all the men had to try to defend their land. And he described how he'd seen a little Armenian girl, a five-year-old girl, slaughtered by Azerbaijan, and her body was hanging from a tree and it'd been cut in half. And he described how he'd wept and vowed revenge. And then he said how he met an Armenian soldier who was wounded, and he could have carried out his revenge and killed that Azerbaijani soldier, and could have carried out his revenge against Azerbaijan by taking out on that Azerbaijani soldier. But he thought he couldn't. He just couldn't. He just said, well, it was against, you know, he just couldn't do it. And I congratulated him. I said, that's amazing faith, amazing grace, amazing dignity. And the phrase he used afterwards is just amazing. He just said to me, dignity is a crown of thorns. And that says so much. Our brothers and sisters are wearing their crown of thorns. They're suffering so much with great dignity. And that's the grace which they show. And it's a privilege to be with them, just witness how they wear their suffering. And dignity is a crown of thorns.
Caroline, you beginning, you said that, you know, as a baroness and your role in the House of Lords and previously as deputy speaker, you entered into public service, right, in the political arena. How has that impacted you? And what lessons have you learned in terms of using that role? And you've navigated some pretty complex situations for the persecuted church. So tell us about your experience as a public servant and how, you know, the blessing and also the challenges and the crosses that you bear.
Well, thank you. As I mentioned, I was appointed to the House of Lords. I wasn't into politics. I was the first baroness I'd ever met. And I actually, in personality, I'm a very shy person. You may laugh, you may not think it looks very true. But I am. When I was a child, I hardly spoke. I was very, very shy. And suddenly to find yourself in the House of Lords, having to speak in that very significant part of the British Parliament, was very, very shy. And I'm still nervous every time I speak. Someone pointed out the other day that they just looked in their diary and they saw 20 days ago, it was 40 years anniversary since I was appointed to the House of Lords.
Wow.
Yes. But obviously, it's a privilege and I need to use it to speak. So I try to use my role there to speak for those, as I've said earlier, whose voices are not heard. So you will see that if you look at the records, that I do speak on behalf of our brothers and sisters on those front lines of faith and freedom. Next week, I'm due to visit North Korea. I've been there three times, and the people in North Korea are really suffering. So we try to be a voice for them and for those in Armenia. And Azerbaijan has just carried out ethnic cleansing of the Armenians from the historic land of Nagorno-Karabakh. 100,000 have been driven out. So I try to be a voice for those whose voices are not heard, and that's where I really try to use my role in the House of Lords. But as I've also said, I try to use it as well for other people in our own country who are suffering oppression, and particularly my concern for Muslim women who are suffering in Sharia marriages that are not legally registered and are vulnerable to divorce. And the man just said, I divorced you three times. So I use my role there to speak for those people whose voices are not heard and to try to be their voice. And what a privilege that is.
And what kind of a progress have you seen with your private member's bill relating to the plight and the struggles of the Muslim women?
A good question and a sad answer. I put in a private member's bill to try to make sure that all Sharia marriages are legally registered. And I've now done it, I think, for about 8 years, most of the time since what they call a second reading. Once it did go through all the House of Lords and went to the House of Commons, but then it was just snowed under by other priorities which the government make. And so we've made no progress with it. But we live to fight another day. And we just hope that the fact it's there on the record helps to highlight the situation and the need for help for those Muslim women who are so vulnerable.
I want to ask you another related question. I just put out a piece in the media about the rise of Islamic fundamentalism in Western nations and the coddling that Western nations and politicians have engaged in with these extremists. And, of course, one of my concerned nation is Britain. And what will it take to get the British public and the politicians to understand that fundamentalism of this kind is not good for any democratic society?
You're absolutely right. I find when I talk that the people, inverted commas, the people to whom I speak, whether it's in church communities or local communities or talks, they understand very, very fully indeed. And they are concerned. I may say there's also a lot of Christian love and generosity, and there is a lot of welcoming to many of our Muslim friends. And many of our Muslim friends are delightful, lovely people. But there is, as you rightly say, this threat of the angle of certain aspects of Islamist. I would say Islamist is a distinct from Islam and Islamism. Islamism is the ideology of ISIS and the other very extremist and aggressive Muslims who have carry out jihad, and their definition of jihad is the destruction of non-Muslims. And there obviously is that element in the United Kingdom. But when I speak, I get a lot of support from Muslims, as well as from our own Christian brothers and sisters and others. The Islamists, I'm afraid, are very different, and they keep their own agenda, and we need to be aware of that, and we need to protect our people from the very vicious agenda of the militant Islamist, which is to destroy Christianity and to take over political power.
I want to ask a question about your public service. I think there. It seems to me that most public servants these days are the opposite of you. They sought it out, and some of their motives are different than others. And in many ways, you're the picture of someone who was in effect sought out yourself by the public in order to provide your service, as opposed to the other way around. But you have been, I wouldn't have said it, but you said it. You've been at this for 40 years, and it is an incredible, incredible thing. And I'm wondering what it's like now when you look back to, say, 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Like, what encourages you, but also what concerns you about how society is changing?
Well, thank you. There is a lot of encouragement because there are many people who share the kind of values which we share here in our talk today. So when you speak in churches or often in schools or other places, there's a lot of concern for the fundamental values, freedom of speech particularly, freedom of speech which obviously is not aggressive, it doesn't violate fundamental values. But there's a huge amount of passion for freedom of speech and other freedoms. So in general terms, the British people, if I can generalize like that, but many of them would share a lot of the concerns that we talk about today. And so many politicians. There's a very good friend of mine, Lord Alton of Liverpool, and he shares our concerns. He speaks on the same issues. So I'm not a lone voice crying in the wilderness. When I do speak, there's a lot of support. But as I said earlier, the problem is getting law and getting governments to put some of the things that we believe are needed into legal practice. And we're still fighting that battle. But I have friends who fight it with me. And I think we need to pray. Because we need to pray that our fundamental values, which are so precious and are based in our Christian tradition of freedom of speech, respect for other people, and so on, that they are respected and protected.
And you hit on this this complicated balance. We've seen it in recent days all over the world, where you have protesters in the streets, saying incendiary phrases. You know, at what point does speech become hate speech? You know, there are plenty of arguments taking place all around the world. I mean, we've seen the incredible skyrocketing anti-Semitism in Europe and even in the United States, you know, for instance, in the aftermath of the October 7th attacks and, you know, all these other things. And it's raising fundamental questions. You know, we have social media now, so there's a lot more speech out there. And I think people are confused, you know, and there's a difference, that, as they say, between rights and what's right. And, you know, I imagine you have a perspective on that as well.
Well, yes. All I can really do, given my situation, is to use my role to speak, to get the truth on the record, to be a voice for those whose voices need to be heard and are not heard. So that's why I really try to use my role, plus supporting people who do represent those freedoms, whether it's abroad. And I've mentioned we work with the Christian people who are suffering persecution in Nigeria, in parts of Myanmar, Burma, with the Shan peoples, who actually are Muslim, are Buddhist. And I might just put in, if I could just mention, we're not only a voice for Christians. We try to be a voice for those people whose voices are not heard. Hmm. If you look around the world today, there's an enormous number of Christians who are suffering persecution, but there are also others. There are Muslims in Blue Nile State in Sudan. We speak for them, we love them, they're delightful, wonderful people. They're suffering at the hands of a pretty Islamist regime in Khartoum at times. We work for Buddhists in Myanmar or Burma who are suffering at the hands of the military regime. The Buddhists in Shan State, we work with Shan Women's Action Network, lovely people who are Buddhists. So we don't only work for Christians, I must put that, and it's the same would apply in our own country. We have to be a voice for those voices are not heard. And so we do that by speaking, and that's the extraordinary privilege of being in the House of Lords, to have that place. But also, of course, you get invited to speak in other places. We've got that funny title of baroness. You're invited to speak places like schools or churches. And so we have an arena where we can actually speak the truth as it is and try to raise awareness of the violations of truth and freedom, and therefore to speak there. So that's how I use that role, and that's where I try to speak, and to speak always about the fundamental values of freedom and the right to believe, and also the right to be critical.
In your work of so many decades, Baroness, you brought hope to a lot of people. My association with you goes many decades, and I say to people openly that you're my mentor when it comes to religious freedom, and of course you're the global patron of Dignity Freedom Network and also the Good Shepherd Church. And I get hope when I see people like yourself. What would you say to, what more can you say to the people who are under persecution, who would listen to this podcast, Christian and non-Christian? And we are also on the same page on that. Wherever people of conscience are suffering, we want to speak out and stand with them. What's a message of hope that we can bring to them?
Yeah, give them a message now, Baroness. We've been talking about what you've been doing, what we've all been doing to combat religious persecution. But people listening to us right now are under persecution. And if you could sit down across the table from them, what would you say to them?
I'd say that persecution is to be expected. I mean, our Lord spoke about it. We're told about it in the Bible, that we will suffer persecution. But there may not be an immediate freedom from persecution. It is something to be endured and to be used as a witness. But there are people who do come through from persecution, and they are signs of hope for the future. We did a lot of work in northern Uganda way back about 20 years ago, and northern Uganda then was subject to horrendous offensives by the notorious so-called Lords of Resistance Army, which was a vicious, brutal sort of terrorist organization with that very false title. But we met the people there who were suffering the Lords of Resistance Army, but with such courage and such dignity, and indeed with smiles. I'll never forget when I went to northern Uganda, one of the early visits, and I met people in a village in northern Uganda, and the next village had just been attacked by the Lords of Resistance Army. It'd been wiped out, and we saw the burnt ruins, and we saw the people that had to flee. They had little children whose parents, they didn't know where the parents were, where they were orphaned. So we had the little orphans like little skeletons. But when we met them, they were so, what should I say, they smiled. Such courage, such dignity, and such faith. And they had that faith which enabled them to smile even under persecution. And we do see that really wherever we go. It always makes me very humble that sometimes you find more joy in worship in the persecuted church than we do back here in Britain. If you go to church service in Nigeria, for example, the singing, the joy when you sing the hymns is just palpable. And they have such joy, but they know they could any moment be attacked by the Islamist Fulani. Churches are attacked. They have to have guards around the church while they're worshipping, just because they expect an attack imminent. But worship is such joy. And I think that, for me, is inspirational and humbling, that those under persecution just do celebrate their faith.
And it is an inspiration for us to talk to you, and humbling, I think.
Yeah.
At least for me, because I want to make an impact in the world that I'm living in, and you make us all tired watching you go off everywhere. And we hope that many people listening to our conversation today will be inspired to follow a similar path and leave the world better than we received it.
Well, thank you for the great privilege of sharing the pain and the passion and the privilege of making a little bit of a difference. But I'm not the hero or heroine. You embarrass me. You're too generous. The real heroes and heroines are our brothers and sisters on those front lines of faith and freedom, and their dignity, their faith, and as I say, even their joy in worship under persecution. Very, very humbling. So they're the heroes.
Amen. Amen.
Heroines. I'd like to pay my tribute to them.
Lot of things to take away from that conversation, Bishop. I have my list. I always have my list. What struck you the most? You've known the Baroness for many, many years.
I mean, an amazing woman, really an amazing woman, of phenomenal courage. And I know how the political situation works in here. And standing up, and she didn't talk about this. I know the Islamists now are going after her here in the UK and other places. There's a lot of hate stuff being put out because she's fighting for the rights of Muslim women. And she's taken that on, and she stands and speaks out. And she's one of the great heroes of our faith living right now.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. And what struck me the most, also, there are many things that struck me, but one of the things that struck me the most was when she has such humility. She's spent 40 years
in the House of Lords
fighting tooth and nail every single day for many of the most vulnerable people in the world, many times against the foreign policy of her own country. And you know, she and I are different. I'm much more of a diplomat, you know, in terms of my approach. But as a diplomat, I cannot do my work if the pressure doesn't remain in place all around the world, so that everyone that wants to take advantage of the vulnerable knows, you know, that it's not going to happen in the shadows. And yet to hear this amazing, amazing woman say, after 40 years of being in the House of Lords, traveling to them, she's like off to North Korea.
Yeah.
and by the way, she's been in every dangerous place in the world. And for her to say to us, by the way, every single time I stand up in that House of Lords to speak, I'm still nervous. And I hope that there's some people listening to us that say, you know what? I don't want to be like all those politicians. The last thing in the world I want to be is a public servant. But if I can be one like this public servant, then okay, I'll step up to the plate, because you know, that definitely is the story of Baroness Cox.
I agree.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to Premier.plus. That's Premier, P-R-E-M-I-E-R, for the Americans listening in. God bless.